latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Bottom of hour two. 30 minutes in, 30 to come. We'll spend a few with Dick Powell. And we've got to do some recapping as we start to see the wire at Chatin and Happy Valley, the Hong Kong Jockey Club. Plus, we'll get some thoughts from Dick about the racing here and about the turf courses here. Dick is so good with tracking that kind of information and understanding the race flow on inners, inner and outers, and where the temporary rails and how that affects things. And has taught me a lot, particularly Gulfstream when they made that transition to the 120 foot wide oval. Also want to talk a little international while we've got Dick too. Dick, good morning.
Steve, I've been busy as could be, re-handicapping Thursday's card with this flash thunderstorm that apparently hit Belmont this morning. I've been hearing rain in the background.
That's not rain.
Am I way off the camera? What is it?
It was the watering system for the big flower boxes that line the front of the grandstand. On the first level, there's those big concrete planters. And they turned the thing on, and I mean, why it was concentrated in the one box, I can't tell you. And I don't know if it, I can't imagine that it flowed anywhere else because it was all coming from this one spot. But it started to trickle off, and now is over. Now just a little drip. I thought, well, okay, well, they're going to water the plants, and it'll be over quickly. But no.
Well, I tuned in. I thought you were in the men's room. So I'm like,
that's hysterical. You never know. It's absolutely glorious. We did get, you know, a good amount of rain overnight, and that is now done. Turf course is going to be right. Both courses, I tweeted this out earlier, both courses are starting the day as good, but it's nice and breezy, so it'll dry out fast. The main track is absolutely perfect. It is as fast and beautiful, and frankly, this based on the training this morning, you could not hear a footstep. So the track is perfect.
Very good. Very good. Good to hear. Good to hear.
Looking forward to it. And I will come back to Belmont after we do some recapping of what went on at Shotton and Happy Valley this week.
Well, Happy Valley was the usual Zach Purton winning four more races.
Unbelievable. It's amazing.
Crazy. I mean, there's only eight races run. He wins four. He has a chance to tie or break Jal Marrera's record of 170 in a single season. He needs 26 wins in the next 10 race meetings. The Shotton meetings have 11, 12 races. The Happy Valley races have 8. But in his favor is the next 3 meets are at Shotton. They're not at Happy Valley. Next Wednesday they're at Shotton, and then next Sunday they're at Shotton. No racing that week on Wednesday, then they're back June 23rd at Shotton. So that's, you know, that's 30, 33 races that he can keep the strike rate going. And I think he'll get close. I don't know if he'll do it, but God, it's four a day at 6 one day. He's just riding spectacular. Reagan Bayless is out. He had an injury and met with the stewards, and the doctors informed them that he has an injury, so he's going to miss the rest of the season. And Karis Keaton has a 2-day suspension, but I'm not sure when it begins. I read it, and I didn't get any details as to when it actually begins. But Keaton's had a good meet, and he was second for a while. Jal Marrera is back into second place. So Ryder Colony just being dominated by Zach Purton. And it's great there because, you know, Marrera's from Brazil, and Purton's from Australia. We got riders from South Africa. We got riders from Mauritius. We got local riders. So it's a great mix. I think there's 21 riders that have licenses, and they're literally from all over the world. Besides Purton dominating yesterday, we saw the usual mixture of prices. Not too crazy as far as form went. You know, 5-1, 3-1, 2-1. And when you look at when you follow international racing, anything under 2-1 is odds on. Because when they give you a price, when you watch TV at night, whether it's Australia or anybody else, when they say 1.8, 1.8 is $3.60, which is 4-5. So they'll be talking about odds on, and you're like, well, how can it be odds on? Not that low, but it is that low because their price does not include the stake. So they don't do the stuff we do with 2 × 2 + 2 = 6. Their 2 × 2 = 4, and that's what the horse pays. They don't include that in the price. So a couple odds on favorites yesterday, but good race in that Happy Valley. And they're going to be dormant for about 4 weeks now. The racing will be a Shotton, as I said, for the next 3 weeks. This week, Shotton is Saturday. Don't tune in Sunday night, and don't say I didn't warn you. The racing is that Saturday night, early Saturday morning here in the West on the East Coast. And we got a couple of picks. Well, one thing I wanted to mention, Steve, there was a really nice horse who won that Group 3 last week at Shotton in Champions Way. And he is one to watch for next year. He's a 3-year-old. Hong Kong has a series of big races and some four-year-olds that we saw this year with the Stewards Cup and the Chater Cup and races like that. And he's just kind of emerging onto the scene. I think he got his rating up to 100. So he will be a factor in next year's four-year-old series of top stake races. And he's just coming along, and you can see it in the ratings. His ratings just keep going up and up and up. This Saturday morning, we will go to race number three. And I like number two, Thanks Forever. John Morera riding, Zach Purton riding this one for John Moore. And had a nice win last time out. This is a 60 to 80, so he moves up a bit in class, has to pick up some weight, but I think he can handle these. Second, we'll go with number seven, Goko, or John Morera rides this one for CH. He's a very consistent horse, and kind of near the bottom of his class level, so he gets 10 pounds from my top pick. So 2-7 in race number three. And as always, these handicap races are kind of a mixture of class, how they fit in their ratings, but also how much weight they're carrying. So it's, you learn this in the Melbourne Cup, that the really good horses carry a lot of weight, and the less experienced horses get in lightly weighted, like Joseph O'Brien did a couple years ago with that three-year-old he won the Cup with. Race five, we're going to go 1,200 meters on the turf. No all-weather racing this Saturday at Chatham also. Number five, Shining Ace, John Morera, John Size. That's always a potent combination. Just comes in off a nice win. Hopefully can come right back and do it again. Doesn't pick up too much weight off that win. And for second, we'll go with Bingo, Matthew Poon riding for John Moore. So 5-3 in race five. And then I'll throw in race number nine later in the card. 1,400 meters. The post positions at this distance really aren't that important. Outside horses tend to win as much as middle and inside horses. And I am going to go with number eight, Happy Force, with the ML Young riding. Just a horse with a ton of speed. Doesn't always hang on. But I think from the outside, post. He did draw post 80, if I'm right. I think he can use that speed to his advantage. Second will go in number two, Green Card, who is removing blinkers. So 8-2 in race number nine. So like I say, we go to Saturday this week, not Sunday. And then for the next three fixtures, we will be still running as Sha Tin, no Happy Valley until June 26th.
Excellent. I appreciate it. Dick, let's turn from that international perspective to something that ties directly to the next 3 days. And with this festival-style racing and Martin Panza's desire to, you know, bring in horses from, you know, all points on the compass, we're seeing some runners that, you know, built their resume in some far-flung locales. And the horse that I actually specifically picked out for that conversation, just reaching for the PPs to get to that. There's Friday. Is it Friday? Is it the... Yeah, in the Gold Cup, for instance, that Atoll. And there's some others. There we go. Hugo Palmer's got Mutsadir, the Dancili, York, Kempton, Wolverhampton, Dundalk, for instance, Ahmad, Linkfield, and Chelmsford, Kempton. Then a couple of places in France. I mean, Deville we know, but Marseille and Dax, that seems, and also Lyon and others. I mean, there's a few places nobody's, I don't see it as often. And then Ra Atoll, who started this season at Hopgarten, which is, you know, a little bit, right? It's a B track in Germany.
Yeah, this is probably one of their better races. That was a Group 2, and which he did win going 2 miles. I look for purse level. I look for familiar jockeys. some kind of name recognition if it's a track I'm not familiar with. One warning on horses, and the good example is number one, Muto Sevier. Had two races at Wolverhampton and Kempton Park. They're on all weather. But if you're going to race in the wintertime, you're going to run on all weather. Even Deauville Chantilly have all weather tracks. So these horses that have raced over the winter, yes, they're racing on all weather tracks. It doesn't mean they're not turf horses. And I think sometimes people make that mistake. So you really have to look what time of year they were racing on it. And winter racing in Europe is all weather racing. So I look at that, and there's the usual suspects that have all-weather tracks. France has a lot more all-weather tracks than we're used to. We just don't see many of those horses coming over here. If you just look at the purse level, you can kind of get a glimpse. Most of the tracks we've become familiar with over the year and what kind of circuit they're being raced on. Then when you get into the gory details, is it, you know, is it left-handed, is it right-handed, is it uphill, downhill, all the nuances of all the racetracks, that's where it gets really tough. And that's where you can just over-handicap something awful because you're putting too many factors on the table and not analyzing them correctly. But, you'll see some players. You'll see some horses for some obscure tracks and some of these, Japanese horses. Now, the one, the horse was in the Belmont. He was running at major tracks. But Japan has a second circuit. They have the JRA, and they have another circuit with lesser purses, and most of the races are during the week, and they do run on the dirt a lot in those tracks. And you don't see many of them come over here because they're usually not good enough. But that's another issue. Australia has God knows how many tracks, and trying to keep track of them is difficult. If they're racing in New South Wales, they're running right-handed. If they're racing in Victoria, they're running left-handed. So if you know where the track is, you can kind of figure out if it's left-handed or right-handed. But, it's a challenge. You almost have to, you know, if it's a Chad Brown horse coming from some obscure track in France, I'm like, don't worry about it. It's a Chad Brown horse coming into France.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it's Peter Brandt or whether it's Martin Schwartz, it's been well sourced and will likely be competitive, but there it did really feel going through these three, you know, these cards that when you hit the, you know, you hit the turf races, the New York and so forth, the Intercontinental, that Binti Alnair I'm going to use today in the Intercontinental, for instance. And in fact, that gets our conversation, Dick. Before we wrap up, I wanted you to touch on the. You know, the reading on the turf course, and I brought up the Jaipur with Rich Migliori. I mean, a race that I don't think, you know, 30 years ago, or the race is probably, yeah, it's been around probably 19 years. It's been around probably 40 years plus. You wouldn't have ever thought, way back that this would be a race at any point that would become a grade one. And yet here it is. Talk a little bit about these two, the Widener and the Inner Turf, and your approach and the styles that work. And I know you got a little thought about a price in the Jaipur.
The Widener just has the big, wide, sweeping turns. And sometimes the issue with the Widener are the distances they run. They don't run many mile and a half, mile and five-eighths, two-turn type races on the Widener anymore. When they start both courses, when they start them almost on the far turn, that can be conflicting. Even the Widener mile comes out of a little bit of a bend. And if you're on the outside and you break out, you got to make a real good left-hand turn to get back to the pack. On the inner turf, especially going a mile and 16th, unless you're a stone-cold speed horse or a stone-cold closer, I do not like the inside post because you just watch enough races and you see a horse get away a half step slow and he shuffle back to last because everyone comes over on him. So that's a key factor. The Widener, at least you have the ability to make a mistake and overcome it, similar to the Mellon Turf course up here, where favorites win at a significantly higher percentage than on the inner turf course. I don't know that's true at Belmont, I'm assuming, but I haven't done the research. But you have not necessarily a long stretch, because remember, the Belmont finish line is in the middle of the oval, not at the end of the stretch like most racetracks have it. So when they turn for home, they might be 960 feet instead of, you know, 1,000-something feet. But it's a soft turn, so you already built up your momentum. And you're talking about Joel Rosario before. I mean, how many times do you see Joel at Belmont, and he's out of the race, and then here he comes on the outside, and he's losing ground, and he's not losing any momentum, and he's not fighting the centrifugal force that he would be fighting on a tighter turf course. So Joel would get them wound up and then just finish down the middle, pull a run. They're both interesting courses. They both tend to, one tends to favor wide trips, one tends to favor ground saving. We still run a mile and an eighth on the inner. We occasionally get a mile and a quarter like we'll have on the Manhattan Handicap on Saturday. So there I like to save ground. And in that case, I want a horse that can accelerate, where the widener, I can get a horse that can grind, that can just be put in a drive with a half mile to go and just keep coming and coming and coming, and without anyone in its path to get up in time. So those are kind of the key differences. We'll talk more about Saratoga, where it's dramatically different than the two turf courses up here. Now, in this year's Jaipur, I did the race. And, you know, I'm looking, and most of these, let's look at this as a poker tournament. Most of these horses have already turned over their high cards. We know what World of Trouble can do. We know what Undrafted used to be able to do. We know what Disco Partner can do on this course, but can he do it again at 8-7? So now I look at number 5, Diamond Oops. And he has some form in dirt. He won a $100,000 stake race at Gulfstream back in December on a sloppy track. You know, he's been a little bit up and down, but he had 3 wins in his first 4 dirt starts sprinting. And then Patrick Biancone, off the long layoff, off a 10-month layoff, decides to try him on turf last time out in a 5-furlong stake race. And he finishes 3rd from the rail, so he got shuffled back from the rail. But the thing that jumps off the page to me is his last furlong in this race is probably 10-1. I mean, he's just motoring. Now, that's March 27th. The race entries closed on March 25th. Now, I'm looking at the condition sheet. I don't even see anything for supplements. But you are allowed to supplement. They don't close the race. And it's an invitation only. So after this race, somehow Patrick made a phone call, and he's in the race. And who did he get to ride? Mike Smith, 30-1 morning line. So just, you know, in other words, what I'm doing is I'm redboarding the race as if it was already run. And let's say Diamond Oops won this race. Well, you'd look back and say, well, you know, he did finish strong. You think it this and you think it that. And he's kind of a last-second addition into a grade one. I'm a trainer who's capable of pulling off upsets. And that just, like, grabbed my attention. I said, going to go with him.
I like it.
Key him for second in exactas. And you know, it's only a 9-0 field, so it's not going to be much to key him in the tries in all 3 places. But it's just, I looked at him, and it's like, just jumped off the page. And I tried to get Trackers information for Gulfstream, and I wasn't able to get it, but I was curious as to what they had his last furlong in. But I know horses come home real fast on turf, but 10-1 is pretty fast.
Dick, that's exactly, you know, that's exactly what you want in a 30-1. I mean, you want to latch on to a tidbit and, you know, plug it into the equation and you know, that's how scores are constructed, precisely. So, enjoy.
And I'm not looking for a 30-1 shot. I found a horse that intrigued me and happens to be 30-1.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
When Saravia won the Belmont, he should have been 30-1. He should have never been 71, but he was.
Right.
And, you know, so I don't go in looking for those type prices, but I don't ignore horses at long odds that have legitimate chances of winning.
Dick Powell, everybody, and a little bit of HKJC.com, Hong Kong Jockey Club, plus much, much more. And we'll talk to Dick next week. We'll do some recapping. We'll look forward to some Presque Isle pushes. And how do we make out? I did not have a chance to watch Tuesday.
Tuesday, what was it? Monday night, I had the first five on the top.
Ooh.
I did all right. And the picks are now on PrescottDowns.com, which
we'll start to link them up.
There's a couple of changes out there and people doing jobs and assignments and stuff, but that got straightened out, so they are available on PrescottDowns.com. Dick's Picks.
Dick's Picks, we love it. Dick's Picks, Big Picks.
Right.
Yeah, Dick. Good luck. Good luck today, tomorrow,
all right,
Saturday.
Dude.
All right.
Yeah.
Talk next week. You got it. We're in good shape now. Cool and breezy. Not only sunny but and dry, but the humidity dissipated. It actually got really sweet, comfortable. Lenny Shulman is with me now, and he's adjusting his headset. Give it a minute. He does have that. He does have a bit of a pee head. Good morning.
Who'd you have on here before?
I've had...
somebody with a big-ass head.
Well, Dale was here.
Well, I know Dale's here, but you know, Dale's... I was sitting... I was sitting... It's always something over here, but it's not the machinery. We had a waterfall going.
Yes, we did.
It was like when you swim underneath the waterfall and you're up against the rocks and you're watching the water cascade down in front of you. It was marvelous here, although I was hoping it wasn't a toilet overflowing.
Well, it's so funny. This has gotten so many funny reactions. I've got emails, and there's things on Twitter and Facebook, and one guy said, "The great segment with Dale. I had to go to the bathroom three times." But I'm bummed.
It's absolutely true.
We're going to get Steve. Deja is going to call now, and we'll get Steve plugged into us and through the magic of technology. And Haskin in Nebraska.
Well, where else would he be? I mean, Belmont Week, you want people on the ground where the action is, where they can test the waters of Middle America and see what the... You know, when we were in journalism school, the expression was you always had to write for the Kansas City milkman. That was the expression. In other words, keep your prose simple, keep it direct to the point. You don't want to talk over everybody's head. And it was the Kansas City milkman. That was the expression. Steve is on the street of Lincoln, Nebraska with who knows what? Cabbage farmers.
Well, I don't know if they grow cabbage in Nebraska.
Well, there's a. I just saw that there's a rock band named Lettuce. Do you know this?
I don't know.
They're playing at the Space in Westbury, just minutes away from us, and then
by Yuck Yucks.
And I was told that lettuce is another word for marijuana, which I did not know.
So it must be some kind of
jam band situation going with lettuce over at the Space. I have to plug Westbury, which is my hometown. They have a fantastic new concert hall over there.
Yeah.
So love Westbury. It's all happening in Westbury.
We had dinner. One of our partners, Steve Carlin, took us over to a place called Veneri on Carmen, which was out of this world. That was on Tuesday night. Really enjoyed.
Good.
Went to Ben's the other day. Had a little nosh at Ben's. The deli. That's up to Roslyn and
okay.
Well, this is actually this one is on Old Country Road, but there's a few and also they're down in Florida too now. There's a big deli war between Flakowitz, which is from Boston, and Ben's. You have to be on one side or the other.
The pastrami is flying.
Well, and who was pushing Pastrami King? Dave Greinich was pushing Pastrami King in, or no, Steve was, in Merrick.
Okay. I need to extend my visit, obviously.
Well, Steve Haskin is joining us from Nebraska, where the pastrami is not known for pastrami in Nebraska. Steve, why are you not here?
Would you two please stick to horse racing already and stop talking about all this nonsense? I walked to Walmart yesterday with the ridiculous idea of possibly finding a box of matzah. I couldn't.
That's funny.
Can you believe that Walmart in Lincoln, Nebraska, doesn't sell matzah?
Are they celebrating Pesach there like 2 months late?
That's the only way Mandy ever bought it, because she was going to have Kiln make matzah bride.
Oh,
so she bought matzah. The only time she can get matzah is during Passover.
Well, I'll tell you what I can do. Aaron Yagoda from Streitz. Aaron may be listening, and it's Thursday. Aaron, please, overnight, I'll get you the address. We need you to FedEx a box of matzah to the Haskins.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? Aaron, are you listening?
Aaron will do it. You know Aaron a long time. You must have known his father.
Aaron, if you're listening, do you realize how many times I've promoted your egg matzah with cream cheese and jelly on Passover?
He does, believe me, because he listens all the time. I will make this happen. Well, you know, you should be, Steve. How are you not on Aaron's gift package list? In fact, Jimmy Ventura was talking about this last night.
I haven't done anything for him. That's why.
The Aaron's not that way. Aaron does it out of the goodness of his heart.
Well, obviously he doesn't, because I don't have any.
Proof is in the pudding or in the matzah.
He's got.
You want me to tell you the sad part? The sad part is when I was in Walmart, and I was too embarrassed to ask anybody if they had matzah, because I didn't want some 18-year-old girl saying, "What the hell is that?
What's matzah?" Well, I can tell you a funny.
Imagine if I was trying to get gefilte fish.
Well, I can tell you a funny story, and I'm sure around the holiday that they do have a display, an end cap, you know, where they've got Passover supplies. When I was working at Procter & Gamble, and I was in Kansas City, and our office was actually very close to one of the big sort of, neighborhood shuls in you know, down past the plaza in Kansas City, down toward Overland Park, and you know where the Jews were. That's where you put the temple. So we came out of our office during the high holidays, and we're driving. We had to go to lunch, and I've got a girl in the back who was in our sales division that was from Nebraska. She was the sales rep up in either Omaha or maybe Lincoln, but she was from even a smaller burg. And so we're driving by the temple, and my manager, Stan Gollinghorst, Stan says they packed them in today, and I said, yeah, listen, if not today, when can you go if you're not going to go for Rosh Hashanah? And the girl goes, it must be a funeral. I said, no, sweetheart, it's not. It's the Jewish New Year. And she says, what do you mean? I said, oh, boy. All right.
I'm still looking for a shul around here. I haven't seen one yet. I'm afraid that if I ask where a shul is, somebody's going to say, is that the thing that you wrap over your shoulder or what?
Well, we do have, we've got a shul right here. We got Lenny Shulman.
You got a shul and a man.
Exactly. Combined into one.
Thank you. And I will wrap around certain people's shoulders occasionally.
Steve, the one thing,
Well, the thing is, hearing Lenny's voice, I am now officially jealous because, you know, what can I tell you? Being in Lincoln and the thought of all that shrimp parmesan being digested.
Ooh.
Steve, I didn't send you the photo the other night because, A, I didn't want you to feel bad, and, B, people started eating it too soon. I couldn't get the camera out in time.
And you still got another one to go, right?
I think tomorrow night we're going to hit Steve's again. Yes.
Wow.
Chico will be in from the city. Chico and the gang. It's going to be big. Maybe we'll get Bick over there.
Well, Tina comes in at 6
tomorrow.
Well, what's
missing is the pastrami and the corned beef and the knishes and the kashevanishkas.
Well,
that would just do not last anymore.
Well, that's your fault. Yeah, or actually, it's Lenny's fault because somebody poured a beer on me, and that was the last. That was the end.
You know, unfortunately, and I know, you know, Naira does a great job, but when they started selling the Friday seats in the clubhouse like they were World Series Game 7, unfortunately, they priced the gang out, which spent more in beer and betting.
They did that on purpose. Why do you think they had that big Friday? So we wouldn't have our jelly feast, that's all.
The handle has gone down, I am sure, considerably since they started doing this. And I'm asked by a half dozen people every year, you're doing the deli thing. We can't do the deli thing.
Why couldn't we do it Thursday?
Because we're dealing with Hot Tub Johnny, who, when he says Friday, he means Friday. You can't deal with people. You have to keep the tradition. I don't know what to tell you.
He didn't seem to be in the spirit of it in the last few years. I think he started getting.
neither did Steve when he got the beer poured on his sport coat, which could have been the funniest moment I've ever seen.
I think the tab was starting to get a little bit extensive. for Hot Tub Johnny.
Nah, that, believe me, that's a trickle compared to what he was putting through the windows.
Yeah,
we'll see how much money Naira's losing in handle by not having.
I'm telling you,
how much money you think all those people that come to Friday? Those seats are mostly empty anyway.
Yeah, all those people aren't coming. By the way, that's part of the problem.
It is subdued, Steve. This has already been an unusual Triple Crown run,
I'll tell you what, people who are not into racing, who I know, I have had dozens of them ask me, hey, that disqualification, did you agree? What happened? What's going on? So in an odd way, I think it's actually attracting people who don't know much about the sport to talk about the sport. It's actually kept this thing going and alive more so than a normal year.
That's not what they ask me. That's not what people ask me all the time now. I go.
They have to ask you where the Mott's is.
No, I tell you what they ask me. They say, "Hey, what about that horse that ran around the track?"
Yeah, well, that's the. Yeah. That's right.
Wow, what about that? Big deal.
In each of the races, we've had a situation where people who are, you know, what they call casual fans or twice-a-year fans are actually engaged by what's going on, which is good.
Do you realize the Derby and the Preakness, they've seen things that they've never seen before. And in the Derby, we've seen something we've never seen before.
Yeah.
What, me getting on a shuttle before 11 o'clock?
You are having a good time, right? That's what I assume.
He just got here, like yesterday. He hadn't been here. When did you get here?
I was here Tuesday.
Hey, he's already been to Piccolo, so he's already having a good time.
All right.
Having a wonderful time. You know, I walked into a Dave and Buster's yesterday, not knowing what. I thought it was a sports bar, right? All right, watch the game, you know, get a meal. I walk in. It's like an acid trip for eight-year-old kids. These kids are running all over the place. The things are clanging like a Vegas casino. You know, I had just smoked a bunch of pot. I walk in there, and I turn to Frank. I got to get out of here. I'm freaking out. I'm going to have a bad trip here in 2 seconds. It's like, have you ever been to these places?
I have never been to one.
Oh, my goodness
I had a friend who was a manager of one, but I never went.
Oh, my God. So we turn the corner, say, okay, here's a bar and a restaurant. I think it's going to be quieter. Maybe, you know, we'll get a table in the back, you know, we'll watch the guy. I turn the corner. There's friggin' 10 bowling alleys over here. They're like, the ball's like hitting the lanes and the things. My head's pounding. A bowling alley in the middle? What kind of place is this? It's unbelievable. Dave and Buster's, my God. You know, if you have a six-year-old who you think's going to be into the Grateful Dead later in life, take him right over there.
you know what's the best Belmont tradition that we haven't mentioned at all, that we don't have anymore?
And they're off.
And they're off in the paddock.
Yep.
With Steve, yes. Yes. Yeah. Paddock's empty. You know, there's a plaque up there now, Steve. There's a plaque where Roosevelt Raceway used to be. There's now a P.F. Chang's, and there's a plaque in the paddock where Enderoff used to broadcast from.
Right next to the Secretariat statue.
Yeah. You know, that's sad, going to a restaurant where Roosevelt Raceway used to.
There's no doubt about it.
Very annoying.
That was my first crack. That's what got me interested in horse racing. Just that first, I remember that night. When I had changed my mind after saying no, when they said, you want to go to the Roosevelt Raceway? And I said, no, I have no interest in that. And I said, yeah, what the hell, I'll get out. And I went with a friend of mine who lived upstairs and his friend, and went to Roosevelt Raceway, and I was hooked. I got hooked on horse racing at Roosevelt Raceway. And I remember the name of the first horse that I ever bet. His name was Apache Wick. But I remember overhearing two guys looking at this program or something, and they're looking at all these numbers and all these letters and symbols and everything, and he's saying, no, he's not going to outrun Crow. I get a lot of Indian names there. He says, he's not going to outrun Crow. And I'm saying to myself, how did he know that? By looking at all that stuff. Then I realized that all those numbers and symbols mean something. You could tell how these horses are going to run. I was so fascinated by that, and that was it. I became absolutely hooked. And I remember going with my parents to Roosevelt on Saturday night for the Roosevelt International with all the Europeans, the big French mare Undomay and Rocupine. You know, all the fillies would come from France and Fresh Yankee from Canada, and he had all the flags up and the big international night. I mean, it was great. And then all the Hanovers, Romeo Hanover, Romulus Hanover, Brett Hanover, Albatross, Niatross, all those great horses. That's what I was weaned on that. I missed that. And then, you know, every time I go to Piccolabusal and drive by the Roosevelt Mall,
yep.
I said, hey, hey, hey.
That actually, well, Steve's story just now, actually, that was the basis for the Flamingo Kid, Steve's childhood.
Hey, listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always wondered why Steve scratches his stomach when he's at a card game.
Rummy, I was never that good in Jim Rummy. By the way, that is a great, great movie that's never on anymore. I wish I got to find it somewhere.
Hector Elizondo, yes.
It's growing up in the 60s in Rockaway.
Yeah.
That's
Wayne Gretzky's wife who has
getting
a
job and going
lead.
To the Trotters at night. And, I mean, it was great stuff. I mean, it was a great movie. Hector Elizondo was fantastic in it.
We agree.
Richard Crenna.
That's right.
One of my favorite movies. And you remember where they lived? They lived in Brighton Beach, right near the subway.
Right near the Knish place.
Not under the roller coaster.
Stalls.
Like
Woody Allen.
Like Woody Allen.
Radio days.
Good stuff. People always talked about the cyclone. I forget, right next to Nathan's, right next to, practically touching Nathan's, was the Tornado, which was the faster of the two roller coasters. It just wasn't as steep.
He's an encyclopedia on every topic. So we're back to the Knish now, and back to the deli.
All it is just us trying to avoid talking about the Belmont.
Well, John Parada actually is going to swing through the studio. So and Steve, you and he can actually riff.
What do you mean studio? What studio?
The studio in Florida.
Where the studio? Where are you broadcasting from?
Me? From the track apron. But the show still originates from the studio.
It's the Calder track apron.
Exactly.
We've detoured.
No, John's going to be there shortly. And, in fact, possible Belmont week not to talk a little touch gold with John, of course. And yesterday with Sid, we actually brought up that Chris McGrath piece in TDN talking about deputy ministers' influence on the pedigrees, not just in this race. But we'll let Steve and John probably do a little bit and on that part of the race. But in advance of that, let's hit a couple of highlights, boys. And in fact, we'll avoid the Belmont for a minute. How about a little Met Mile, Steve? Why don't you and Len give us some Met Mile thoughts? Because let's face it, this is going to be, as you know, going forward, this is probably more important even than the three-year-old event.
Who's Len?
Len Shulman, Lenny.
Never heard anybody call him Len before.
I've called him. That's in my phone. He's listed as Len Shulman. Should I change that, Len?
Well, people confuse me with Len Barry a lot when they call me Len, so maybe you'd want to.
God, Len Barry, whatever happened to him? Trivia question: What was Len Barry's group before he went out on his own?
Lenny? The Barry Sisters.
A lot of big hits.
Jay and the Americans.
No, the Dovells.
Oh, we love the Dovells. Philadelphia based.
That was Len Barry. Len Barry was the lead singer.
How about that?
He did the Bristol Stomp.
You Can't Sit Down is their great song. That's the best.
You Can't Sit Down came right after the Bristol Stomp.
That was after they
went
out on the
zone, and he had that 1-2-3.
Well, that was.
I always heard that song was on the radio when I used to. I was working in a printing factory, and every day on 23rd Street, I'd go in and have lunch, and I would have. Are you ready for this? And you're sitting down. The same thing every day. I would listen to 1-2-3 on the radio, eating a pepperoni sandwich. That was it, just pepperoni on there. I would sit there every day eating pepperoni sandwiches.
How come every vegetarian I know eats more meat than I do?
Exactly.
Why is that?
Exactly.
Oh, he's a vegetarian. Oh, yeah, he's a he just ate 83 meatballs. He's a every vegetarian is eating, like, tons of meat.
Yeah. This was 1965.
I don't care. Fit into the shtick.
I'm sorry, I disrupted the stick by giving the sense of reality to it. 1965, I was waiting to be drafted.
Well, yeah.
Undrafted, now, how's that for a second?
Can you imagine me in the Army?
No.
That's
a movie.
It's Stripes.
He's
gone from Flingo Kid to
Stripes.
He's a skinny
sidekick. Get him out of the yard. It's a cross-country buddy movie. My partner Walter and I, we worked for like 2 years developing this Eddie Murphy movie for Paramount, these two guys. We go in every week. After 2 years, like, get him out of the Army. After 2 years, get him out of the Army. We don't want him in the Army anymore.
He said, you know, when you go down to the draft board for your physical, before you go upstairs, run around the block about five times. I remember taking the test where they would give you like a box and say what does this box look like? And it would be like you have to fold the box to see what it looked like. I was clueless. I would have been, let's put it this way. If I had been drafted in the Army, I would have been the first person to be sent to Vietnam. I would have been a total grunt.
No, that's another Woody line. In the event of a war, I'm 5F, a hostage. We shouldn't be talking like this on D-Day anniversary, by the way. This is very inappropriate.
Let's talk about that.
I blame you, Steve.
You know, nobody has more respect for that than I do.
Well, and on that topic, later today I will send out my when we happen to be at Belmont and the timing is right, there is one of the great World War II memorials right here at Belmont that no one, the people walk by all the time, and the four chaplains, the bronze of the four chaplains. And I will send that out later. That'll be today's
I don't even know what that
teaching
is.
Moment. The four chaplains.
That was a group with the Dovells. They were around the same time.
Four chaplains of the apocalypse.
You're making fun of something very. I'm ashamed of you two more than usual.
I would not admit that if money had
it. Oh, throw me under the bus.
Oh, I'm thinking if he could be tasteless, I could just follow up with it. I never would have initiated that in a million years.
Wait, how do you know the four chaplains couldn't sing?
They may have done a little bit.
Thank you.
Oh my God!
I need Troop Malika here to defend me.
I remember a gang called the Chaplains. In New York.
This is unbelievable. This is hopeless. There
was the bishops and the chaplains. They were actual gang names. They were gang. I'm
oh, you mean like Sharks and Jets. You mean like West Side Story gangs.
Street gangs.
Another thing that you wouldn't have been a good
at. Gang in Brooklyn back in the 50s called the Chaplains.
Were you ever drafted into a street gang?
You got any teardrop tattoos?
Yes, I tell you one thing, by the way. We got to a point, by the way, where everybody was afraid to come into the Jewish neighborhood. They say, uh-oh, I think we're in the Jewish neighborhood now. We better get the heck out of here.
Well, because you were going to give them trafe. You were going to give them pepperoni.
You're going to do a forensic accounting of their finances.
To try to pull this back together, the four chaplains, U.S. Army transport ship Dorchester was torpedoed, and a Jewish rabbi and a Catholic priest
walked into a bar.
This is getting worse and worse. And two ministers.
Why the long fist?
Two ministers, and they gave their life jackets to sailors and went down with the Dorchester.
Why are you such a downer?
I'm not. I'm trying to.
We're trying
pay
to
homage
entertain.
On the 75th anniversary.
I do have a question, though. By the way, when you say a Jewish rabbi,
as opposed to, but I'm all right. You win. You got me. So much for your matzah care package.
No. Aaron, please, if you're listening, I beg of you. Tomorrow night is the scheduled matzo brine night. If you can, Aaron.
Dinner? I thought it was breakfast.
Overnight. Except that you don't have an address. Email me. I'll send you my address.
I think you can text it to me, Steve. It's not you are using your cell phone, yes?
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact.
All right. We're going to get you the matzah. Even if I have to go over here to
Walmart.
You know, yeah, the cave to Walbaum's and get you.
Hey, listen, if you could do it from Beverlywood Bakery, you can do it Stripes Matzah.
You know what? That's it. Exactly. I am like the.
You've spoiled them. You've spoiled our.
I am
Steve.
The Hummets Angel. In this case, the Afikoman guy. Oh my God! All right, back to the Met Mile. Let's try to get some horse racing result oriented conversation in.
Okay. Now, you got to remember. Now, if I misfire in any way, if I mention a horse that's not entered, you have to excuse me. I've not been on top of things here. This is not racing oriented, and we haven't seen much. And I don't have my computer with me. But let's talk about it.
I take Lenny, start us
running.
Off.
He's the favorite, right?
McKenzie, Ron Anderson yesterday.
Who will be the
guaranteed.
Favorite?
McKenzie.
Yeah, you
McKenzie.
Think so?
Yeah, it's. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well. great race.
I'm not usually a fan of sprinters stretching out, so I don't know if I would go with Mattioli here. He's never been a mile, and I'm not crazy about a sprinter that's stretching out. Cole Front is different because he's been two turns. He ran well on the Razorback, so I would. I wouldn't discount him. He's coming off a mile race at Maidan, the Dolphin Mile, which he got up to win, coming off the pace. So he could be, and he's by Stay Thirsty. So he could be very tough in here. So I wouldn't bet favorites, even though McKenzie's going to be very tough to beat. I got to give Frenzy Fire a good shot.
Yeah.
If he's ready to go a mile, they've been sprinting him off a lot.
I know. I was standing next to Mr. Bick at Churchill Downs when Mattioli ran that weekend, and I don't know what you carried out from that race, but I don't know how a horse could have looked better than that horse looked that day. And you know, was the field as good as this one? No, but it was. You know, he had a past promises fulfilled and go on with it, and. It just didn't look like the extra eighth was necessarily going to be a problem for him.
I agree.
I'll say one thing, by the way. I mean, if you look at his speed figures, his Brisnet figures are monstrosities. I mean, he's been running, you know, 120s, 119, 118. I mean, he's been running some huge, huge numbers there. Did they enter Pavel?
Yeah.
Yes.
I never know what to make of that horse. I'm still waiting for that horse to develop into the super horse that I thought he was going to be.
I just don't see this distance being his distance.
Career. You never know when he's going to fire.
Yeah. Well, call front, you know, it's going to be tough being down on the inside of that of this other speed in here. He's going to have to be very good, I think, from there. Yeah, Thunderstone is a really interesting horse in here. Shortening, going the other way, but, you know, he's got plenty of miles on his resume.
I don't know if he's got the speed. Do you think he's got the speed for this race? Flat mile? I don't know.
It just depends. If these horses don't come back, nobody's going to have the speed. But, you know, if they knock each other into the ground, then you have to think Firenze Fire is going to be sitting in the garden spot, I would imagine, with Thundersnow and McKenzie. But... you know, the way Mattioli went by Promises Fulfilled last time, and, you know, Promises Fulfilled is a pretty damn good horse on the front end. You know, look, who knows? It's been 5-6 weeks, but if that horse is doing as well as he was that day at Churchill, he is just going to be tough. I don't know.
Well, you got to respect McKenzie. I mean, normally a horse like that, okay, I don't know if he's ready for a one-turn mile, if he's got the speed for the air. But his race in the Malibu was so strong. I mean, he came from so far out of it and just absolutely blew everybody out of the water.
And it may be that this, you know, that the elongated sprint distances, the 7 to a mile, is his wheelhouse. I mean, it does, you know, it does make some sense.
You know, he's coming off of 3 two-turn races, so it's a question of whether he would have that kind
how
of
sharp.
Speed.
Yeah.
But you know, he runs close to the pace, so I think that'll help him. I think he'll be running 4 or 5 lengths off the lead. And he's three, you know, he looks like the class horse of the race.
I just looked. I hadn't noticed it when the PPs came out. But the short comment on the Ali Sheba line, shot past. And I haven't seen that. I don't know, last time I saw that, shot past, drew off. And that really is an accurate portrayal of what he did in there. It does feel like he can sit, and especially because the two speeds on either side of him, they're going to go, and he can basically Smith. I mean, what better trip could Smith fall into than just letting the two of them, you know, go shoulder to shoulder? It feels like he gets the same trip around the turn, Lenny, that we saw at Churchill, right? And then just tip out and go.
I'm not so sure Call Front has the speed to go with Mattioli and Promises Fulfilled early. I'm just not sure. I mean, he may have to try from that post, but I
He's got to go forward to establish position at the least.
Yeah, but I just don't think he's as fast as those other horses are. But and so McKenzie may find himself a little further back than we may think. But listen, if he's as good as he's been in the past, yeah, sure, he can come get him. But it's such an eyeball thing with me, and I'm just blown away by that race in the Churchill Downs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazingly impressive what this horse is.
Yeah,
it's a heck of a good field. I mean, it's very interesting.
Yeah,
field.
Exactly.
I mean, some really, really good horses in here.
I wish.
Let me. I think John is set up at the studio too now. John.
Hi guys.
Hey John.
Hey John.
How are we doing?
Good.
I was just listening in here. It's fun. It's the lone.
You're the only one.
The lone goy in the crowd here. So.
There's always one.
You can't get this kind of entertainment anywhere else.
That's right.
And John, of course, we do have to ask you the question of the day. Were you in a street gang or the army?
Neither one, actually.
John, where did you grow up?
You know, I grew up around Red Bank, New Jersey.
Didn't you ever hear of the gang, the Chaplains?
The Chaplains. Nope, don't think I knew them. No, I went to a Christian Brothers school. We weren't allowed to. There was a gang by itself.
Oh, never mind. I thought you said Red Hook.
Yeah, no.
Red Bank. Yeah, you would.
Red
know
Bank.
The Chaplains,
Red
not
Bank.
New Jersey.
Red Bank.
They hung out in a church
basement. I mean, that's Red. Yeah, I don't know. Red Hook. If you were from Red Hook, you'd know the Chaplains.
No, I wasn't allowed to go that far north in those days.
Anybody out there in Radio Land, if you've heard of the Bishops and the Chaplains, write in.
Let us know.
John,
we're going to talk Belmont in a second, and particularly a couple of wheelhouse items for you, because Deputy Minister is getting a ton of attention leading up to Saturday, and Touch Gold as well, being the broodmare sire involved. But your Met thought before we talk Belmont.
Well, I was listening to your comments. And I've always thought of it like a breeder that it's an elongated sprint. You know, it's that type of horses looking for milers for the best breeding horses. I think Frenzy Fire is the horse that I like the best in the race, but not having the pedigree that we want. Maybe McKenzie, my other, you know, that's as far as I could go there.
Well, I appreciate it. I want to now dive right into Belmont with the three of you. And let me get out the PPs out. And here we go. Thank you. John, did you read Chris McGrath and TDN about Deputy Minister? Because, of course, we've got Intrepid Heart out of a Touch Gold mare and Deputy Minister as the sire of Sexy Samurai, Master Fencer's Dam. So you've also got Awesome Again, heavily leveraged in here, son of Deputy Minister, both on top and bottom on pedigrees, Everfast Dam by Awesome Again, and Sir Winston himself by Awesome Again. So this has got John Parada's
It still amazes me that after so many years, every weekend I look at some stakes race and there's still some Deputy Minister mares left that are producing at this point in the game, and they're still producing stakes winners. It's just astonishing. He was,
and you know, his yearlings have always been bargains. I mean, you never see million-dollar Deputy Ministers,
nope.
And yet he's in so many pedigrees.
In so many. It's amazing. And the fact that he's been gone so long.
Of course, I'm as close to Touch Gold's pedigree as anybody. I brag about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of fond of that one, too, myself.
John, talk about the mating and getting, you know, basically producing Touch Gold.
Well, the Deputy Minister one I always like to go back to, though, how we got him, how we got the hair, you know, going that direction. Because we had a mare named Sister Dot, who was by Damascus, and by out of a sword dancer, Damascus mare herself, and she never won a stake, but she was stakes placed a few times, and we probably were running her the wrong distances and everything, and it was one of the first seasons of deputy minister standing at stud. And, of course, we were breeding a lot to him. We bred deputy minister to Sister Dot, and the resulting foal was De Hare. And, you know, up to that...
Was she a secretariat?
Secretariat, yeah. What did I say? Damascus. She was secretariat out of Sword Game, who was by Damascus.
Yeah.
But up to then, everybody... I remember comments people would say, well, he's a sire of fillies, because he'd had Open Mind, you know, who was so dramatically superior for 2 years. And everybody looked at him for fillies, and then along came De Hare. And then after that, you know, one after another. And he proved himself with turf horses, sprinters, everything. So it was just a real joy to be around. Stood at Fred Seitz's Brookdale Farm. He started out at Winfield's in Maryland, and Rick Waldman was running the breeding book for Mr. Young in Kentucky, and he was also a friend of Fred, as I was, and came around to time to move him, so we cast our votes for Brookdale, and it all turned out pretty well, I think.
He was not a horse that they let you get close to physically.
when you
visited there.
He's a big brute, yeah. But he had Silver Deputy, who was also a very, very fine stallion. And Fred stood him, too. But the influence, like you say, Steve, it's just a remarkable. That after all this time, he's still popping up.
John, when I was at the racing form, did you ever read my two-part series on picking out Touch Gold as a yearling?
You know, I probably did, but I don't recall. It's been a while.
I'd rather you said you didn't read it than not recall.
I don't recall a lot of things, Steve.
I make it up as I go along.
So
I do a feature to pick out a yearling just out of the catalog whose pedigree I liked. That wasn't going to be like one of the top prices. That would be somewhere in the middle, and chronicle his whole life. And I picked out Touch Gold. I mean, obviously, I just looked at the pedigree, and then I went down. I made a special trip. Racing Form paid for it. I went and made a special trip down to Kentucky. John Moynihan took me to the farm where he was, and I took out pictures of him as a yearling, and I talked to the grooms, and I got his whole life story, how he got there, and how John got to buy him, what kind of disposition he had.
Stole him.
And I wrote
a whole
story about this yearling, and then went back again for the sales. Flew back to Kentucky and hung around the barns and watched I watched Frank Stronach and Mike Doyle come and look at him and what their reaction was. I spoke to everybody, Sakura, I mean everybody down there who was who had anything to do with the horse. I spoke to the handlers, and then I chronicled his whole thing being sold. And then when he became Touch Gold, he became like my horse. I felt like a bloodstock agent that had picked him out. So nice. He's always been. You should have seen me in the after the Belmont Stakes, where everybody was down, and I'm saying, "Oh, gee, poor Silver Charm, we didn't get a Triple Crown winner." And inside, I'm like giddy. I'm so happy, trying to contain it, because you know it was my horse that had won the Belmont. So that's always been really one of the most special memories I've ever had in your track.
Oh, that's. I'll have to go back and look at that again. I mean, his Preakness was.
Yeah, if you can't find it, let me know. I'll send you copies of it.
That would be great.
Can I just say, and I'm not saying he's going to win the race, but having watched him gallop here for a couple of days now, there is a live long shot in here that you guys have mentioned. Sir Winston has just galloped like a champ on this track for the last 2 days.
That's my other rooting interest out of a Fleet Alex mare. I mean, that's the other horse I'm absolutely
crazy
about.
Tracy Farmer Homebred.
Pedigrees. What's that?
Tracy Farmer Homebred.
Yes, and we haven't really heard much from him since Albert the Great, but this horse, he doesn't have early speed, so he doesn't figure in the Belmont profile, but if it falls apart, this horse is going to be coming late, I think. I think this horse could definitely get a piece. How's that?
Well,
well, that's the whole thing. I mean, he's coming around right now, but the whole thing is the Belmont profile. If he can win, you know, with that kind of running style. Let me ask you a question, by the way. What is the latest thing? You can fill me in on this. What's the latest with Tax? Is it looking, unless I heard it was 50-50?
Whether he runs, you mean?
Yeah.
He's in as far as I know.
Well, they said he was going to enter him, but he had that bruised foot. He had a stone bruise. And he had his workout that wasn't all that great. So he said he was going to, Danny Gargan said he was going to enter him. And then watch him the whole week and see how he trains and how the foot progresses. So, but he was going to enter him and then wait and see. So I don't know if there's anything later on that. Obviously there isn't.
No. And if Steve Bick isn't saying anything, you know there's nothing.
Profile and has the pedigree.
Yeah, he's an interesting one actually. You know, it's,
he's a horse member. How many young horses from 2 to 3? Had 3 consecutive mile and an eighth races. I mean, you never see that anymore. You know, and if you watch his Derby, he was down on the rail the entire race. I don't think he was comfortable with all the slop getting kicked back. And then if you watch in the stretch, you'll see that Alvarado just eased up on him, like at least the last eighth of a mile. He just stopped riding him. But yeah, it's like a lot of horses from the Derby. That's the kind of race you can just throw out.
Yeah,
you know, cause the fact that they, you know, you see what they did with that track. They left that track open, so it was just a big, you know, muddy, sloppy mess. So a lot of horses obviously didn't handle it. So if a horse ran poorly in the Derby, I'd very, very easily just cross that out. And if you like them going into the Derby, which I did with this horse, you know, he was coming off with 3 consecutive triple-digit Grisnet numbers, with nobody else can claim that. And he's got the tactical speed. You know, he's by Arch out of a Giants Causeway mare. He's got a very strong pedigree throughout his whole 5 generations. He's a pretty interesting horse, I think. But I just don't know what kind of shape he's in physically.
Yeah.
Well, in the Express Bet Guide, as I've mentioned, I picked Intrepid Heart in part, you know, trying to level the scales from Commissioner's Performance, his brother, when Tonalist caught him. And so I'm taking the Touch Gold mare in Flaming Heart, John.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, got to reiterate again Todd Pletcher's success in this race, and with the 3 wins and with the 3 seconds that all, I mean, were within, you know, jumps and noses and you know, very close to winning. I mean, you could think about that. If those go his way, it'd be 6 Belmont wins in what, it'd be 13 years. I mean, it would be it would be Woody-esque. And it's so funny that this would be the race that he would, of the classics, that this would be the one, you know, where we frequently have questioned his training approach when it comes to, you know, the half miles and the easy 5/8, that for whatever reason he's had a real touch in picking out horses for this race, John. And, you know, you've been friendly with Todd from day one, and it really is unusual that, you know, the Derby has been pretty elusive, even with the 2 wins, and that the Belmont, he's had such success.
Well, the thing about Todd is I think he is kind of what I'd call a classic trainer, really. I mean, he's that's what he's always aiming for, to get horses that'll, you know, run his 3-year-olds to the classic, through the classics, the Triple Crowns and the Triple Crown and the, you know, Travers and the like, to get them to go a mile and a quarter. So this is this has always been, we talked about this being the breeders, used to be the main breeders race, where AP Indy came from and horses like that. that you wouldn't necessarily look at the Preakness winner to find a horse you were going to breed to, but you would look at the Belmont and the kind of people that Todd trains for. That's what they have in mind. They're not looking to win random races. They're looking for they're zeroed in. So
no love for spinoff. So speaking of Todd Fletcher, I mean, he's going to be the price in here, and he's another horse that has the right style, and he's another horse who I'm totally going to throw out the Derby. I mean, the Derby was a totally.
I made a case for him.
Total throw out of a race.
I made a case for him in the Derby. I thought he would have been very competitive.
I bet him. He was one of my two or three long shot bets in the Derby.
Yeah.
But you know, at 50-1, again, he was totally throw it out. I mean, he didn't have the best of trips at all. And going into it, I mean, look at his race in the Louisiana Derby. You know, finished way ahead of War of Will. I thought he ran an excellent race.
And
I loved his race at Tampa, where he won off by himself, his acceleration he showed. The thing I loved about Spinoff in the Tampa race, if you ever watch it, is that he from the quarter pole to the wire, his ears were up every second of it, and he accelerated away. He went from like 2 lengths in front to 8 lengths in front in 2 seconds, and he did it with his ears straight up. So I think he's a very talented horse. I thought he ran an excellent race in the Louisiana Derby. Just wasn't quite ready. You know, just got beat at the end. A horse got, you know, by my standards, got through on the rail on him. He had a wider trip. And then throughout the Derby, what's in that like?
No.
You know, I don't love his pedigree at a mile and a half. I mean, Heartspun, you just don't know. Zaptic was more of a miler, mm-hmm. with bike gone west. So, it's more of probably a mile and eighth pedigree, but wouldn't surprise me if he could stretch it out. I don't know. He's going to be a big price in here.
Mm-hmm. What else do we have to consider, Steve? Any other...
Well, I mean, Tacitus obviously is going to be the favorite over War of Will, I would think, right?
It feels certain at this point.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are going to love the Tappets because, you know, you talk about records in the Belmont Stakes. I mean, his record in the Belmont. You know, the funny thing is that Tappet always had the reputation of being a stallion where you'd want to see help on the bottom side to get him long distances. Because you think of Tappet, it's more of mile and eighth type of stallion. But the Belmont Stakes has completely disproven that. So, I mean, you know, to win three Belmonts, obviously you can get a horse to go a mile and a half. But again, you want to look at you do want to look at the female family. You know, and that's another thing I've seen in Crippled Heart's favor. You know, to have Tappet on. With three Belmont winners on top out of a mare by a Belmont winner, you certainly can't knock that pedigree for a mile and a half.
Lenny, anything else? You got Sir Winston's your price?
Sir Winston's my price. You know, I think Master Fencer's probably getting more attention than
he warrants.
Than he warrants, but... you know, I mean, you talk about pedigree. I mean, you know, Close Hatches being the dam of Tacitus. God, I used to love watching her run.
Remember, by the way, her best distances were a mile and a 16th to a mile and an eighth.
Well, I understand that, but
most of her wins were a mile and a 16th.
Look, Steve, you know, are these horses made to go a mile and a half? Every year there's a winner of the Belmont who doesn't have the pedigree to go a mile and a half, which, you know, unless you're bred in Ireland at this point, is going to be the case every year now. So, yeah, that stuff doesn't bother me. It's more, where's he going to be early? You know, you have to think War of Will is going to get out of there and be pretty quick, I would think, from that post. And, you know, Tacitus doesn't show a lot of early speed in his races, so you The mystery to me is, where is he? You know, is he going to just track War of Will no matter where War of Will goes? Probably from there. You'd think he'd have to, or else he's going to be too far back. But
another thing about Sir Winston, by the way, I tell you, a real, real sneaky race with him was that Tampa Derby. I mean, that was a much, much better race than even looks on paper. I mean, he was like absolutely nowhere, and he was. People don't realize how much he was flying at the end of that race. I mean, he only got beat 4 lengths by Tacitus in that race, and he was like 15, 16 lengths out of it, like at the quarter pole.
Yeah. Yeah, he may come running. He doesn't fit the way this race has gone, but, he could surprise a lot of people. I think he may be the show bet of the year, maybe.
You could reverse King.
Look at a horse like Jazzle. Remember how far back Jazzle came from? Jazzle came from the clouds, and yet when he won the Belmont Stakes, he was like on the lead at the quarter pole.
Yeah.
You know, horses get that big turn. You know, if you start making a move, like if Sir Winston is within two, you know, if he can make his move on the turn, and if he's within like 2-3 lengths of the leaders, no more than that, at the quarter pole, he's got a big shot. You know, a lot of times people think these horses are, you know, they come, sure, they make a big stretch run at a mile and eighth. They come flying the last eighth of a mile. Put them at a mile and a quarter, and like Jazzle, you know, they make that move, and then, boom, they still got a quarter of a mile to go. But if they have the pedigree, and Jazzle certainly had the pedigree, they just keep going. So don't expect Sir Winston to be, you know, as far back at a mile and a half at the quarter pole.
Yeah, because they don't run away. They're not going to run away as fast. You mentioned Ireland. John, we should get a couple of words in from you, too. The Irish Derby coming up, and you're going back, right?
I am, yes. it was an interesting Guineas this year at the new Curra, which is, I was trying to explain it to somebody what the difference of the Curra is. Steve, you'll appreciate this. Lenny, I don't know if you've been there. It's like they took a Piper Cub and made it into a 747. The place is incredible.
They've modernized it that much?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're not going to believe what they did to it.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it was a nice racetrack. I mean, not that they didn't do anything to the track, obviously. The Curra is the Curra.
It was an old racetrack. It really was. There was nothing modern.
Nothing modern about it.
I remember when I was there for the Irish Derby, after the race, by the way, I was trying to walk, you know, through the grandstand. I had a dodge literally 5 million beer bottles.
Oh yeah,
that was like all laying all over the place.
Yep.
And then the parking lot was an open.
The chaplains were there.
We had these gypsy women, you know, nursing
right.
their little babies, looking for handouts.
Those ladies are still there. Those ladies are still there. Yeah, they'll sell you a chocolate bar for €3, and a poppy. For good luck, the same ladies. I think the one lady, she's been trying to sell me a poppy for about 35 years. I have fun talking to her, but it's really worth the trip. I'm telling everybody, we had a great time. We're going back for the Derby, I'm sure Aiden won't have more than 5 or 6 in there, which is a whole other conversation we could have.
Speaking of that, what do you think of the Epsom Derby? Boy, you talk about an exciting race.
Well, you know, that's funny because it's a shame why I wasn't on before that. We were talking about it because that horse, the winner, Anthony Van Dyke, he ran through the rail at Killarney last year. I was watching the race. We had a horse running in another race that day at Killarney. And it's a kind of a horseshoe-shaped going right-handed, so it's coming around our way. And as they come down the stretch, there's just a little bend at the end. And he was going so fast, he ran right through the – and the rails over there are just the PVC pipe. It's not – there's no safe – you know, and there's no hard outside fence or anything. They run – you know.
That was going the opposite way of us then.
Yeah, let me see. It was going – no, they go the same way as us. So what is that? Is that left-handed?
That's left-handed.
That's left-handed. Right? Yeah, they're going left – yeah, that's right. It's left-handed. But he made a huge stretch run. So I've been watching him for a long time. And the horses over there, as we've listened to them say so many times, they're all ground dependent. You know, whether if they catch the right ground, if they want it soft, they want it hard. And it's hard to get your head around it at first because they water the tracks there. They do the opposite of what we do. We're hoping it doesn't rain. Over there, they're pouring water on, and they scratch if the ground's too hard. So,
yeah,
you know, so you have to take that in consideration.
But the first five in the English Derby all ran super. I mean, I thought Mad Moon was game as heck to, you know, hold off all those, the other O'Brien horses who finished third, fourth, and fifth.
They were
Sir Dragonite and Broom and Japan. I mean, they all ran super races. I mean,
well, there's a big debate
on
Hayden
O'Brien. Wow, seven horses in there.
Yeah, when you think about it now, at some point they get in somebody's way. Right, whether, you know, it's supposedly not intentional, but when you have seven and you're the master trainer, and I love Aid, when you're the seven and you have the master trainer, shouldn't you be able to tell which one the seven, three of them or four of them that have the best chance, and what are the other three in there for? You know, is it a total surprise when they win? You know,
the thing is, John, I don't remember years ago. I forgot who the big horse he had in there, but he had a rabbit in there, strictly in there as a pace setter, and the horse went off at, and it was in the Irish Derby. He went off at 200-1, and he finished second in the race, and the horse that he was in there for a rabbit was out of the money. But he finished second with a 200-1 shot, a rabbit that was a no-hoper. So you never know sometimes. Because what happens is that they delegate these horses as pace setters early in their career. But I think he does it without really knowing 100% how good these horses might be.
Well, they don't get that many races, yeah.
If you see an Aiden O'Brien pace setter, bring him to America. Watch how good he's going to be.
That's a good idea. Yeah, they've started using Warfront a lot over there, and I think he doesn't want as much cut in the ground as a lot of the horses that they have, the Galileos and the like, who want a little bit of give in the ground.
Speaking of sires, Galileo is unbelievable. Oh. I mean, he's either sire or the grandsire of like everybody.
Oh, he's amazing.
Every one of Aiden O'Brien's horses.
He's amazing, and they get about 200 of them every year. So, talk about
and
embarrassment.
This is a follow-up to Sadler's Wells and Dane Hill, who together sired 750 stakes winners.
But.
So, I mean, to lose both those stallions and then come up with Galileo, who's on pace to, you know, to be right up there with, I think he's already got 300-something stakes winners, maybe more.
Yeah, that was quite a succession from Sadler's Wells to Galileo, though, happen. I mean, you know, if you go to the museum.
The record, Sadler's Wells, I don't think ever broke Daniel's record. I think he missed by, I think one's got like 360, the other one had like 340 or something like that.
Well, let me interject. We got three or four to wrap up here, and John, we'll get back. Are you staying in Florida until you leave?
I am. Yes, I'm going the week after next.
All right.
We did buy a horse for the Dublin Racing Club. You'll be happy to know we bought a Kitten's Joy. We have to go to Ireland to buy a Kitten's Joy. But, you know, there's always the difference in people's reading pedigrees. So I think I have an edge over there buying American pedigrees. And I've kind of figured out which ones will work over there. So we bought a nice filly.
John, what's your Irish website? What's the address on that?
DublinRacingClub.com. And
I'd love to join that.
Yeah, You're
totally welcome.
Totally
to.
Welcome to join, and you should. And we had members over there this for the Guineas, and people are coming for the Derby, and I think a number of people make plans for the Champions Weekend, which is always really worth going to in September.
Well, people out there, if you haven't been racing in Ireland, boy, you're missing a lot. It is so much fun. Anyway, England too, but boy, they love their horses out there.
It's kind of old school, and it's just very charming. The little tracks are great, and like I said, when you want to go to the big one, you go to Leopardstown or you go to the Curragh, and you feel like you're kind of an American style racetrack.
If you ever get a chance to go to Ballydoyle to see that operation,
that's amazing.
That is absolutely amazing. If you want to see Aidan O'Brien work, I mean, it's incredible.
How easy is it?
You hop over to Coolmore to see the stallions, and
that's not that's not easy to pop into.
I was going to say, John, how can people? Is it accessible the way we have the tours with the Kentucky?
Not really.
No,
that's okay. It's more of a closed shop.
CourseCountry.com.
But you can get.
You have to get an invitation or so.
Yeah, but you can get to a tour Coolmore, which is definitely worth. You know, you go see Galileo and all the superstar stallions that they have there, and just to see the facility itself. I sent people down there for a tour last week, and they just came back and said, "Oh my God, we never expected this." But DublinRacingClub.com, and there's plenty of information on the website. We spent a lot of time putting that together.
And then you have to take in. You got to get to McCarthy's.
Of course, yeah, for a pint. Got to get the McCarthy. Yeah, McCarthy's.
Is there matzo over there?
It is. It's called brown bread.
It's Irish soda bread.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they call matzo there.
Well, they do. They did call the O'Briens, right? The O'Briens were the Irish Jews, the Leo and his brother. Yeah.
Here's a trivia question for you.
God,
who is a regular at McCarthy's who hangs out there all the time? Who doesn't live that far away?
Got
nothing.
It.
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he has a big farm. You can tell where his farm is because he's got the longest fence in Tipperary. It's a stone wall that runs. It's around it. So who the hell lives there? This wall keeps going and going and going. Oh, that's Andrew Lloyd.
Oh, what's the town? It starts with an F.
Fethard. Fethard.
Fethard.
F-E-T-H-A-R-D.
Really cute town.
Yeah, lost it.
Yeah, got a great museum in Fethard with the skeleton of Sadler's Wells.
Wow!
Really?
Yeah. Not a facsimile or anything. It's his actual skeleton.
Wow!
Oh wow!
Yeah, which shows you every piece of a horse's.
How about that?
Own structure. It's very cool. It's right down the street from McCarthy's. You have a pint. You go down to the museum. Stagger around.
Don't have too many pints because then you'll try to jump aboard Sadler's Wells' skeleton. John, I appreciate it, and we'll talk before you leave, and we'll get more details. Is there a name on the two-year-old?
We put in some names for her. I haven't got one yet.
All right, so we'll wait and let everybody know and
joy.
Put up pictures.
Yeah,
excellent. Is she U.S. bred that was transferred, or was she
dropped
US there?
Bred, brought over there. And,
okay.
Yep, she's by...
Nice.
She's
nice.
Lot 47 at the Gorsebridge sale. So,
excellent.
If you want to look her up.
I appreciate you coming by. And
remember... What an eclectic conversation this is.
That's for sure.
About a diverse... where do you get some diversity?
Well, you completely truncated the ability for Lenny to plug his book.
Great job on the book, Lenny. Nice job.
Thank you, John. Sure. One thing I'll say about this Belmont field, it's only been a year, but I'm getting very nostalgic for Justify.
If people that are nostalgic for Justify, you can see his placard now in the infield, and you can buy Lenny's book where fine books are sold everywhere. Harry Rice, who says hello, John, Harry Rice just came by to have his autograph.
My man, Harry. He's the best.
The greatest. Well, yeah,
check out the reviews on Amazon. Where somebody commented, by the way, how well written the forward was.
Jessica, couldn't let it go. Couldn't let it go. Of course, the forward is 63 pages and the book is 80. But Steve Haskin, everybody, Lenny Shulman. John Parada, you can follow them all on Twitter. Rich Migliori earlier, Dale Romans, Dick Powell tomorrow. Weekend preview at the races. It'll be mostly on site with all your favorite handicapping friends. Thanks to Deja back at the studio. And replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Racing starts here at 3:05. My picks are up. Well, they'll be up momentarily. I just want to put the multi-race wagers together.
It's a day-night doubleheader.
It is. And Wilbur Wood is going to start both ends. Hey now.
Very good.
Thank
Aaron,
you.
Very good.
My best friend growing up was named Aaron.
Send me the address. It's unbelievable. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody.